Jimmy, I'm a recovering addict. And I'm clean by God's grace, God's mercy, sponsorship, the 12 steps, 12 editions, and Narcotics Anonymous. And can we give the committee a round of applause? Most East Coast conventions are 2 years in the works. This one was 3 years in the works, right, because of COVID, and yet it was able to be done through dedication and commitment to Narcotics Anonymous and carrying the message to addict that still suffers. And I'm honored and humbled to be here this morning, and the love that I received walking in. And you know, I wasn't able to be here this weekend, and when I got the message from Kevin, that registration was open. I have my daughter graduating from college, and my other daughter is 47 days away from getting married. And, you know, listen, life has become full and real as a result of the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous and a relationship with God. And I no longer put the podium and sharing my experience, strength, and hope in front of the well-being of my wife and my daughters. I don't know if anybody else in here can identify with that, but I ran all over the country, sharing all over the place, taking care of home, but not really taking care of home. They always had what they needed, and they knew I loved them, and I always made sure they were supported, but there were some times where emotionally I was more involved in Narcotics Anonymous than I was in the well-being of my wife and daughters. And I don't know if anybody else has had that struggle, but that's been a struggle for me since I've been clean. And I got clean May 1st, 1992. I just celebrated 29 years clean in May. Came to Narcotics Anonymous in 1985, right? That's a really, really long, that's like a lifetime ago. Not the 29 years, is it? But I had a full head of hair. I had my own teeth. I don't have any hair. These are bought. The disease of addiction ravaged me. I just want people to know, I'm going to talk about where I'm at in the here and now, where my life is, but I want people to know. I got a question. CJ kind of planted a seed. Partially, he like kind of put the seed in the ground and then he tried to pull it back out. Who got clean on Zoom without making a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in his room? Anybody? Nobody. I can tell you that there's like 15 people in my home group who never made a live meeting of Narcotics Anonymous who got clean. Right, as a result of Zoom and Narcotics Anonymous and the platform, and one of the guys that I have the privilege to have in my life, Brian, had a lot to do with a lot of meetings and a lot of Zoom stuff being put on him. And it's not about building him up, it's about talking about dedication and commitment to Narcotics Anonymous. And I was anti-Zoom. I'm a hugger. I'm a holder. I want you to hold me. I need to be held. I need to be loved. I need to be seen. I need to be heard. And on Zoom, it's just this little picture of me. And I don't like what pictures of me look like, so I'm wondering what people are thinking, because even at 55 years old, with 29 years clean, I'm still vain more than I'm not vain. I'm still caught up in what people think about me than I'm not caught up in what people think about me. I'm still worried about whether or not you care about me and love me, or if it's just because I can articulate words in front of you that you're impressed by me, or do you really love me? And I know that sounds weird, since I've been in the same relationship and married to the same woman for 32 years. Celebrated 40 years together. I have a 28-year-old daughter who I know loves and adores me. I have a 22-year-old daughter who loves and adores me. I have men in my life who love and adore me. I have parents in my life who love and adore me. But when I see me, I don't see what you see all the time. I don't know about anybody else. I still struggle with feeling like I'm okay in my own skin. It's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still there. It's still evident. It's still prominent. And you can tell by the way I treat myself, not how I treat others, because I always treat everybody else better than I treat myself. I think that's a manifestation of the disease of addiction and a lack of surrender on my part and being able to be loved right where I'm at. So I used for a really long time in Narcotics Anonymous. I got enough white key tags. I don't know, there's probably about 70, 80 people in here. I got enough white key tags for everybody in here to get three. I got enough 90-gate key tags for everybody in here to get one, because when I came around back in 85, I don't know about, you know, anybody else, but when I came around, all I heard every meeting was, when you get that burgundy key tag, you can speak, right? You can sit in the front and be important like them people. You could do H&I. So I would smoke crack on Thursday and celebrate 90 on Monday. So I just want anybody that's in here that's struggling to get and stay clean to understand that I understand what it's like to come to Narcotics Anonymous, get all the love in the world, and still not feel worthy of being clean. I've lacked self-worth most of my life. So when I talked to Kevin and I said to him, well, I don't think I can commit for the weekend. I need you to go back to the committee and tell them that they should get somebody else. And he called me back like 20 minutes later. He's like, absolutely not. I'm like, wait. You love me. You respect me. You admire me. Is that Kevin R. or is that the body? And he said, no, the body said they still want you to come. So when you tell people that you can't make the weekend and they still want you to come and you still lack self-worth, there's some work to be done. And I say that because you're not going to arrive. You're never going to arrive in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't care how long you've been clean, how many times you've been through the 12 steps, what your relationship with God is. It doesn't really matter. You never arrive at the absolute understanding and self-acceptance 100%. At least that's my experience. I have not arrived there. And as a matter of fact, I don't ever want to arrive there because I'm afraid I'm going to start doing my own thing again. So I came to Narcotics Anonymous for years using. And in 1985, in 87, I was in treatment. And H&I came up. That's why the East Coast Convention's always been a big thing for me. H&I came up, and my man came in, and he had a raccoon hat. He had a sheepskin coat. He had Lee jeans with the sewn-in seam. And for real, this is how he walked. And there was the baddest girl with him. And I don't know what he said for 45 minutes every week that he came in. I heard, if you want what we got, do what we do. So I thought that's what he was talking about. Now I had a fiance at home who loved me and paid for me to go to treatment and enamored me and all of those things, who was absolutely gorgeous and beautiful, but she was 15 plus tax. She didn't have a single defect or characteristic that wasn't phenomenal. I deciphered that myself because she never said a word. She didn't hug any of the men. You know, she followed protocol. Men with the men, women, she hugged only the women. And I was like, but that's my girl right there. But him, I was afraid of him. He was too cool for me. Matter of fact, he looked like Daryl Mack from Run DMC. He kind of sounded a little bit like him. He looked like him. He couldn't rap worth a lick. In 92, I went back again to treatment for the umpteenth time. And I had 33 days clean. I was going home for the weekend. And I went into this meeting on a Friday night in Mattawan, New Jersey. And this cat was in the front of the meeting. And he had a blue sweatshirt on. He had a pair of Lee Dungarees and a pair of brown Timbs. And he raised his hand, and I can use his name because he died clean some years ago. He said, I'm Andre, and I'm a recovering addict, and I'm really struggling. I'm in multiple relationships, but I know through God's sponsorship and the 12 steps and Narcotics Anonymous that I don't have to live like this anymore. And I'm in the back of the room, 33 days clean, wanting to smoke like there's no tomorrow. I got money in my pocket. I'm going home for the weekend to see my wife, who put me on the streets, but we built some stuff again. I'm going home. I got money in my pocket. I already have a plan. I'm going to smoke Saturday morning, and then I'm going to tell her I'm at a meeting in the morning, and then I'm going to tell her I'm at a meeting in the afternoon, and then I'm at a meeting at night, and you know, because you know, all good crackheads can come home whenever they want, and I was going to come home, you know, after I finished smoking, and then I was going to sleep, and then I was going to get up Sunday, and I was going to smoke a little bit more and tell her I was at a meeting and smoke a little bit more, and then I was going to go back to the treatment center and beat the drug test, and this was all in my head, and this joker raised his hand, talk about multiple relationships, and I'm like, he's a punk. Ain't no man supposed to be doing that, talking about that stuff in no meeting. I didn't know who he was at the time. The meeting went on. It was on the seventh step. And there was about nine of us in the meeting. The meeting ended, and, you know, we get to the front of the room, and we're in the circle, you know, and I'm in front of the punk. I'm just trying to be transparent. I want the newcomer to know that we understand that you are still caught and trapped in the disease of addiction, and we get it, and we love you right where you are, not where we want you to be. And here he is in front of me. We're doing a serenity prayer, and it's, God, grant me the serenity to accept the punk Crazy stuff, man. And the serenity prayer ended, we dropped our arms, and I found myself standing nose to nose with him and sobbing. And I remember him saying, "Jimmy, what do you need?" I said, He said, "What?" I said, He said, "Jimmy, I can't hear you." He said, "Jimmy, you're gonna have to like look up at me." And I started to say something, and as I dropped my chin, he put the back of his hand under my chin, and he lifted my chin with grace. And I said, "If you don't help me, I'm gonna die. I need you to help me. Can you please just help me? I'm gonna die." And he pulled me in, and CJ knows him. I'm sure some other people may have run across his path over the years. And he pulled me in, he said, "I would be honored if you would let me be in your life." An immediate rise in my self-esteem. And when I was done crying like a blithering idiot, something inside of me changed. I had surrendered. I was ready to find a new way to live, no matter what it took. And I remember saying to him, "All right, I got my basic text. We're going to do Who's an Addict." He said, "Nah, we're not going to do it." "What is the NA program?" He says, "You've been here for 7 years. If you don't know by now, reading that book is not going to help." "Why are we here?" He said, "Bro, you better know why you're here by now." "Well, what are we going to do?" He said, "We're going to work the steps." I said, whoa, I got to get 6 months. He says, "You can't get 6 months. That's proven." Now I went from resentment to love back to resentment. And I'm like, "Well, what are we going to do?" And he took me to page 19 in the basic text, and he said, "We're going to write the steps." I said, "Write the steps?" He said, "Yeah, we're going to write the steps. Did you ask me to sponsor you? Or did you?" "I asked you to sponsor." I said, "Okay." He says, "Are you going to follow direction or not? Because I got a lot of men in my life, and I really can't, like, right at me." I'm like, "Oh, where was that loving, honored to be in my life guy? And what happened?" But he cared and loved me enough to say, "Your life's on the line. We need to change." And we didn't have the step working guide. We didn't have It Works How and Why, Just for Today, just come out. We had these worksheets. I know. They were bogus. They weren't NA approved. I get it. But they saved my life. They changed the perception of life for me. He handed me the first step and had 13 questions on it. And I said, "What do we do with this?" He goes, "You answer the questions. We go over it. We move on to step two." I go, "It can't be that simple." He said, "It is. We need to gather information so we can learn a new way to live." And I went home back to the treatment center. I wrote the 13 answers out. I called him at 10 o'clock. I said, "Andre," he said, "Bro, you just left me an hour ago. What could be wrong already?" I'm like, "I answered all the questions." He goes, "Read your first answer." I read it. "Read your second answer. Read your third answer." He goes, "You wrote all the answers." I said, "I wrote them out." He goes, "What's your address?" I said, "Mind your business." He said, "Jimmy, I just need your address." I'm like, "What do you need my, I just need your address. I'm not giving you my address. 21 Dino Drive, Keysby, New Jersey." "What time are you going to be home?" "Why? You're getting really nosy now. Sponsorship is, that's not what this is." Like, I had a clue what sponsorship was. I said, "I don't know, I should be home around 8:30, I think." I got home, I was hugging my wife in the living room, and the doorbell rings. Now, I've been smoking crack for years. Blessed by God's grace, I never went outside my marriage. I know my wife's been committed. The doorbell rings, and I'm like, "Who's at the door?" She's like, "I don't know who's at the door. Well, I've been gone for like 33 days, and people are ringing the doorbell, 8:35, 8:40 in the morning. Who's at the door?" She's like, "I don't know. Go see." And I went to the front door, and there was Andre with his basic text under his arm and three cups of coffee. I said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "You said your first step was done. We got to go over your step work." I said, no. He said, yeah. "Are you going to let me in?" And my wife comes behind me. She's like, "Who's this?" I'm like, "Oh, this is Andre." She goes, "Oh, hi, Andre." He goes, "Hi, Gloria, how are you?" I'm like, "How does he know her name?" Because I had been talking in meetings for years about gibberish, but once in a while I'd say something smart. She goes, "You going to let him in?" And he came through the front door. And he put the coffee down and his book down and he hugged my wife. I heard him say to her that she could sleep now. It was going to be okay. Jimmy's on the road. We're going to get him better. I just need a couple minutes with him to go over this stuff that he did last night. And she was like, cool. And it started the journey of recovery for me, including my mom and dad. And I love my mom and dad with all my heart. That was the first person who ever made me feel like I mattered. The first person. He loved me like I didn't. I was crude, rude, obnoxious, arrogant, indignant, self-righteous. Every defect that's possible, I was that, manifolded by the 100. And he just loved me. I called him every day at 4 o'clock for 2 years. He moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and he told all of his men to move on. I refused to move on. My wife made a way. I flew down there 4 times a year. He came up to see his sponsor. I spent time with him. I wanted to be Andre. I wanted to love people like he loved me. I wanted to care about people like he cared about me. I wanted to speak like he spoke. I wanted to have the spirit. There was something inside that man. I wanted it with all my fiber. And I heard, if you want what we have, do what we do. Chase it like you chase the disease. And I chased him. And at 8 years clean, he left Narcotics Anonymous. I was devastated. It took me 2 years to get a new sponsor. And I've had the same sponsor for the last 20 plus years. But I'm just going to tell you real quick what's happened. At 15 months clean, my wife got pregnant. She gave birth to my oldest daughter, Ashley Marie, at September 3rd, 1993. In September, she'll be 28 years old. August 14th. August 14th, I'll get the privilege to walk her to the end of the aisle and hand her to a man. That I've helped raise for the last 7 years. He got clean. He hated me. He hated my brother, who's here with 13 years clean last week. He hated him. He hated me. He hated everything about us. And then one day, in my home group, he sat next to me. I was like, what's up, Bob? He's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. He's like, can I sit with you? I said, I thought you all liked me. I'm like that guy. And he's like, no. I said, no, bro, you've been dogging me out for the last 18 months. He goes, can I sit next to you? I said, I'd be honored if you sat next to me. It was the circle of life. He felt unworthy and unloved. And God sent him to me because I had the ability to love him and help him to feel worthy. And then he asked my brother to sponsor him. And he did step work. And he started to grow up and mature. And then we went to Miami. They invite me to Miami to speak. So my wife and daughters go. And this individual's down there with his girlfriend who's like talking about getting engaged too. And my daughter's on the side of the table with me, and they're making goo-goo eyes at each other. And I'm like, Ashley Marie, he's with his girlfriend. Daddy, I'm not doing nothing. And the two of them are like, across the table at each other. I'm like, Ashley Marie, Daddy's hot. I'm like, that's an exaggeration. He's cute at best. So we get back from Miami, and my brother's here. Anything I'm telling you, my brother's here. There's other people. CJ knows me from the day I walked into Narcotics Anonymous. They'll tell you whether I'm lying or not. I walked into my house one day, and he was there, and he's, Russell's gone. I'm like, bro, what are you doing here? Oh, I just went home my seventh step with Russell. Like, ah. I go, Russell went to work 3 hours ago. What are you doing here? Oh, well, you know, Ashley was home, and we were, first of all, nix it. She is not, you two are not talking. I would never, Jimmy, I would never disrespect you. I would never dishonor you. I have too much love and respect. I would never do that to you. Like a week later, I come in there, sitting on the couch next to each other. I'm like, yo, fam. What are you doing? He said, we're not doing nothing. I'm like, there's a whole couch over here. Why are you on the love seat together? And you're way too close. We need room for God between you two. That's my baby. And you shot dope and are a felon. And her mama been through enough. She don't need to go through it. I would never. And 2 years ago, he came to me on a Thursday night and asked for my permission to marry her. And I said, I have one requirement. And he said that I treat her as well, if not better than you. I said, that's a high standard, buddy. He said, I'm up to the task. And then he sucked me right in. He said, I have the best example in the world in you to show me how to treat a wife and children. And I was like, oh. Come on, dude. Come on. You could have said Russell's guiding you through the 12 steps and, you know, you're feeling spiritually refreshed. You got to say me. He lost his father when he was 11 to the disease of addiction. He found him. And on June 19th this year, on Father's Day, he handed me a card. And in the card it said, 20 years ago I never thought that I would ever have the emptiness inside me filled from the loss of my dad. And you have fulfilled that. And you have made me want to be a better man. And I'm honored that you call me your son-in-law. And I know I'm a lot to deal with. But you got a really big God with a really big heart. And you've loved me when I was unlovable. And I want you to know that I see you as a father. Now imagine if I got my way and I kicked him to the curb. Where would he be now? Not that I'm that powerful. But what we do and how we treat people has a great impact on people's lives. How we love them when they feel unlovable and unattainable and unteachable and unreachable is critical to the well-being of the people around us. So in 40 some odd days, I'll get to walk down the aisle and begrudgingly like this. Who gives this man? I don't know. Maybe somebody out there. But I'm talking about living a life worth living, beyond my wildest dreams. My youngest daughter was born June 9th, 1999. July 3rd of the same year, we put her in a hospital with 102 fever, and 103 fever, and 104 fever, and 105, and 106, tubes in every orifice of her body, 107, ice bath, 108, ice bath, 109, ice bath, 110 fever. The doctor said she'll never function as a normal human being again. Her brain function is going to be very low. And then he came back 4 hours later and he said, Mr. Trowbridge, I need to speak with you. He said, I need you to make arrangements. You need to get your pastor, your priest, your imam, your rabbi, whomever it is that you believe in, if you believe, you need to get them here. They need to give this young lady last rites because she's never going home. And with my oldest daughter on my one arm and my wife on the other arm, I looked at him and I said, you ain't make her, you can't take her. We already gave her back to God. It's in his hands now. You just do your job, let him do his job, and wherever it falls out, we'll make do. And he got out the door, and he stuck his head back, and he said, Mrs. Trowbridge, can I speak to you? And my wife was like, no. I'm like, no, Dad. My wife went out the front door, and he told her, and she said, Doc, in your best interest, don't come back in that room and say stuff like that in front of my husband, because no negative talk is allowed in this room. And I called her Sunshine, and I sang Sunshine, My Only Sunshine to her. Every day, hour after hour after hour. And on June 8th, I got to go to Montclair State University and watch that beautiful, gorgeous 21-year-old girl walk the stage with her bachelor's degree, right? With a 3.73 grade average, high honors. Dean's list, freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, senior year. Sophomore year, accepted into the master's program for special needs teaching, which you don't get accepted into until you're in your senior year, but she was so dedicated and committed that she got accepted. So when people counted her out, God counted her in. And through our faithfulness and our love for her and our surrounding of her, we were able to pour enough love into her and walk her through struggle after struggle after struggle. She's not a good tester, yet she gets straight A's. Her comprehension, she struggles, yet she's on the dean's list. And I know that might not sound like recovery, but when you have a foundation around you based in principles and the God of your understanding, you have the ability to pour into people stuff that you might not even have. You have the ability to love people through the nightmares and the darkness, because it talks about in the 12th step, it talks about us being a beacon of light. And I've been a beacon of light in Narcotics Anonymous because I have the ability to articulate words. I can quote the basic text. I can quote it works how and why. I can share like Shakespeare. And I'm not denouncing any of that. I'm not saying any of that is not an attribute. But when I have the ability to pour into my wife and my daughters and have them become who God created them to be, I'm talking about a guy at 5 years old in kindergarten when the teacher asked the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? I didn't say a doctor, a fireman, a baseball player, a football player, a lawyer. I said, I want to be a dad, and I want to be a husband, and I want to be a father, and I want to be all the things that I don't have in my own life. I want to be all of those things, and I just want to be able to get to that point. And God saw fit to bless me with a wife who stayed, no matter what, with kids who came, even when I didn't feel worthy, who I might have neglected from time to time, but poured enough love in, and they had enough love inside of them to be able to come back to me. The basic text says that the harvest always comes in the right season, and the harvest is starting to come for me. All the work, the dedication, the commitment, the sacrifice, day after day after day, going to work and working 40, 60, 80 hours a week, 7 days a week for 15 years straight, so my daughters could dance, so that they could go to college, so that they could have everything they wanted. It's starting to come back. The fruit of the labor is starting to return to my life. I'm starting to reap the benefits of all the sacrifices that were made. And there was a time where I wouldn't talk about this stuff, but I'm going to tell you right now that I'll be damned if I'm going to let what other people think about me stop me from talking about the transformation power of Narcotics Anonymous, because the hope is that both of my daughters were given last rites, yet one's getting married, the other one's going for her master's degree. My wife's had cancer 15 times. She's been cancer-free for 11 years now. So if you say you have a struggle with me talking about God and how good he's been in my life, I don't understand that, because that's nobody else. That's not the doctors. That's nobody else. That's my wife and I being hell-bent that no matter what, we were going to become all we could become. My father beat me violently. That's why I have false teeth. Well, smoking crack didn't help. But he did knock my front teeth out of my brother's right there. My brother will tell you it was so unfair. I got thrown down concrete stairs. He did the same thing. My dad would be like, come here, buddy. Didn't he just do the same thing? Didn't he just do the same thing? Didn't Russell just do the same thing I did? But that's who my father was. He's not that person anymore. My dad is my brother's biological father. He'll tell you sitting here, I'm closer to him than he is. Because I've learned how to forgive him. I've learned how to let him off the hook. He did the best he could with what he had. Was it good enough? Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But it doesn't matter, because I don't live in the past anymore. He had open heart surgery 2 years ago. We flew out. He came out on the back deck. They live in Arizona. He said, hey, buddy, I got to be at the hospital like 5 in the morning. I said, all right, yeah, no, I'll get mommy up. And Russell, he said, nah, you ain't getting nobody up. I said, well, who's going to, me and you? I said, well, what about Russell? Yeah, whatever. He knows. I said, what about mommy? No, she's definitely not coming. She's going to drive me crazy. He was a cop. I ravaged Jersey City. Ravaged it. I ravaged his name. He had every right to be bitter and angry with me. But as a result of Narcotics Anonymous transforming my life, he's learned how to love and forgive me for the things I've done, as I've learned how to love and forgive him for the things he's done. We have a great relationship. He was suicidal 18 months ago. He told my mom he was going out into the desert and he was going to shoot himself. And my mom called me. She said, "Hey, something's up." So I called him. You know, I got this kind of relationship with him. He's a Giant fan. I'm a Cowboy fan. Yeah, I know. Boomy, boomy, boomy. It's all good. He's a Yankee fan. I'm a Red Sox fan. So, you know, we butt heads on a lot of things. So we usually go back. I called him. I go, "Yo, what's up?" He goes, "What's up?" I go, "Well, what's this gibberish you're talking?" He goes, "What are you talking about? Did your mother call you? Sissy!" I hear my mom, "Yeah, babe. Run, Ma, run!" "What's the matter, baby?" "Run, Ma, run." "Oh, all right, Jimmy." Out the room she goes. I go, "What's up, Dad? What's going on?" He goes, "You know, Dad, buddy, I can't do this. I can't get out of the chair. I can't lift my right arm. I can't take care of myself." I said, "Okay." I said, "I remember a guy who back in 1972 married this woman who had two incorrigible young children, a woman who battled cancer for the last 45 years. And I remember a guy, as crazy as he was, sticking and staying and taking care of those incorrigible kids and taking care of that sickly wife. So I think that the least that can happen is that sickly wife who's healthy now can now take care of her husband who's ill. And I think that one of your incorrigible kids, who's fortunate enough to still be alive, can make sure you have everything you need. Whatever you need, you got it. You need house care? We'll send it. You need a nurse? We'll send it. Buddy, I got money." "No, Dad, it's not about money. It's about love. It's about me giving back to you what you gave to me. Buddy, I wasn't too good to you. We're not going to talk about that, Dad. You gave me everything." I posted on Facebook on Father's Day that if it wasn't for him and his dedication, I didn't talk about the things he did to me. I talked about his commitment and his sacrifice and everything he did for me that I couldn't recognize as a child that I see today that made me the man that I am. The result of him teaching me and raising me the way he did is why I treat my daughters like I treat my daughters. That's a result of Narcotics Anonymous. I know this doesn't sound like a Narcotics Anonymous message, but this is what happens when we work the steps. I could come here and break down all 12 steps and articulate my intelligence and my brilliance about the 12 steps and what they mean to me and break every sentence down to you, tell you what it is. And I can do that. I have that gift. It's inside of me. I don't need the books in front of me. I don't need to do all of that. But I think when we share life experiences, people attract to that. Listen, people are attracted, right? They're attracted to our strengths, but they're connected to our weaknesses. So I've learned how to share my weaknesses from a position of humility and not arrogance. Listen, I'm going to be really honest with you. See them? See how white they are? They're really bright white. You know why I put them on today? Because those legs down there are extremely bright white. And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm going down there with all those Florida people. They're all going to be brown and dark tan. And everybody's going to be like, because I'm so self-conscious, everybody's going to be like, 'Oh my God, Jimmy, aren't you a construction worker?'" "Yeah, I'm a construction worker. Can't you tell? Look, I'm a construction worker. You can tell. I got the tan. It's on the head. It's on the arms. I don't have the legs. Why? Because I burn. Yet we bought a piece in Florida." I'm 13 months from retirement. 37 years in the local. I have 34 years accredited. My wife and I started a real estate business 4 years ago. My youngest daughter is going to graduate in May. I'm going to retire in June. My wife's retiring in December. She's pretty powerful. She's probably going to go in July. She keeps saying, "I'm not doing 6 months after you." And I'm like, "You stayed home for 7 years. She's like, "You agreed to that. I'm not agreeing to 6 months. We started this real estate business to offset our money. So when I retire and I go for half my money, we'll be able to offset it. I want to live a life worth living. My wife has become my best friend. I was telling Jim W. before. Brian and I talk about it. You know, we're together every other Monday. He drives from Philly to Jersey for us to eat dinner. He thinks that's for him. He's, you know, that's how sponsorship works. He's like, I need sponsorship time. Yeah, come up Monday before the home group. He's like, yeah, I need to get some time with you. He sponsors me for like 3 hours. He has no idea. He leaves, he goes, I feel better now. That's what happens when you help people, bro. You feel better. He's like, no, I come up for sponsorship. No, I don't work that way. Sponsorship's a two-way street. I've had the same sponsor for 20 years now. He's got stage 4 kidney disease. He had a stroke, prostate cancer. He's a diabetic. We just buried his mom last week. He's 71 years old. I can't tell you the last time I called him looking for help. You know why? Because he needs help. He needs to be loved. He needs to be cared for. He needs to be walked with. He's poured out and poured out and poured out and poured out into my life. It's time for me to give back. I have millions of people. Not really. I have thousands and tens of thousands of friends all around the world in Narcotics Anonymous. I have about 5 people who know who I am. For real, for real. They know my insecurities. I still struggle big time with insecurities. Big time. I am so self-conscious. So I'm like, you share for like 20 minutes and it's and they can hear it. What? That's what my head says. Oh, you're lisping now. Who cares? I'm lisping. What does that mean? I got teeth in my mouth. I can eat a meal. I don't have to have 55 mints because there's blood in my mouth all the time because I neglected my well-being. I don't know if anybody else has done that. I came here and learned how to carry the message, and I didn't care about nothing else. The hat had to match the sneakers. What meeting am I doing? When do you need me there? Oh, you want me to sponsor you? Sure. You got enough time? Of course I do. Because it was about numbers, it wasn't about lives. It was about ego and pride and arrogance and indignance and self-righteousness. I am probably the worst person in Narcotics Anonymous with the phone. Anybody ask me to sponsor them? I'm like, yeah, good luck. And then, one of our great predecessors passed away last year. And one of his guys posted on Facebook, I was like, that's why I love Dutch with all my heart. One of his guys posted, Dutch told me, do you know, if you get me, you get me. If you don't, you don't. There's tens of thousands of people in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm like, yes! That's what I'm going to tell people. I haven't told nobody that. I just tell them, listen, I'm a busy guy. I do a lot of things. I'm not just tied into Narcotics Anonymous. I'm in the community. I do things in the community. I practice a faith in my life. I'm involved with that. I used to be like, ooh, you can't talk about that. The 11th step in the step working guide says that some of us need to go outside of Narcotics Anonymous for our spiritual development. I needed to go outside to develop my spirit. Here's the blessing, is God has graced me with the ability to come back here with all the spiritual development and not violate the traditions and learn how to love people from a position of understanding and humility and not a position of arrogance and direction. I don't know about it. I'm talking about me now. I have a tendency to be arrogant. And don't let me think I know something. Because then you're in trouble. I've been so wrong through my rightness, it's not even funny. I figure I get a laugh out of that. I argue with my wife and I'm so right. And she knows I'm right and I know I'm right. And then she don't talk to me for 3 days. I lose. Well, sometimes I win. Sometimes that's a win. And you better not tell her, Cindy, that I said that. Don't tell my wife I said that. Listen, my wife has become my best friend. B-Mac and I, Jimmy and I, were talking about it before. Like, absolute best friend. I'm talking about ride or die. We really don't even argue anymore. We used to go at each other's throats. Because I had to be right, she had to be right. Today, she'll look at me, I'll look at her. She'll be like, you're an idiot. I'm like, yep, guilty as charged. And you're a stubborn mule. And she's like, yep, guilty as charged. So what are we going to eat for dinner? Where before, it had been like a week or two before we even looked at each other. Well, you know, listen, I have no problem being trans. Come on, babe. Come on, you got to talk to me. Don't ignore me. She used to make half a bed. Well, that's will tell you, when I first got clean, he'd come to the house. He'd be like, oh, you used to fighting again? How do you know? He goes, oh, I went to the bathroom. Your side of the bed's not me. You're out. So, listen, I'm just in a different spot. We bought a place in Sarasota. You know, I got a lot of friends here from Florida. Listen, I got a question. Am I the only one that wonders how Paulie D still sounds like he's from Boston when he's been in Florida for 22 years? I'm on the phone with him. I'm like, I don't really think he lives in Florida. I'm like, come on, bro. He had that accent. He's still got that whole Boston, which I love because I'm a Red Sox fan. So I love that whole twang, but I'm like, come on, bro. There ain't no way in the world. Because Mark don't sound like he's from Philly. You know, I do those things. Like, I can't be from Florida for 22 years. But I've developed a relationship with him. And then I buy this place in Sarasota and I tell him, he's like, I'm 40 minutes from you. I'm like, cool. Now we could build a relationship. Because that's what this is about. This is about building relationships. I know the fourth step says they can be a terribly painful area. They can, when we don't know who we are, and we try to change them into who we want them to be, and then we change them into who we want them to be, and then we don't like that person, and then we want them to change back. In the meantime, we're not changing because, you know, we're perfect and we don't need to change. I don't know if that's your story. That's my story. I've always wanted my wife to be outgoing. Now she's outgoing. I'm like, can we go? My daughter calls me Mickey Mouse. She's like, we go to conventions. Everybody wants a picture. Everybody wants 5 minutes of your time. Now it's my wife. We're out to dinner. Paul and Rhonda, my wife and I, are out to dinner in Sarasota. And them two are like, I'm like, what are they doing? And on the couch, we're having like a 2-minute conversation. They're like, on the dining room table. I'm like, Paul, can you get her out of places? He's like, yeah, it's tough sometimes. So I helped her to become more outgoing, and now I wanted her to be more introverted. But if the truth be told, I wanted her to be more outgoing so that she would leave me alone when I went to conventions and I could be the star. I'm very honest about who I am. Now I don't want to be the star anymore, so I want her to be closer to me, and then she wants to be the star, and I don't like it. Don't shine brighter than me. That's unacceptable. Do you know who I am? Do you have any CDs? Just telling you who I am, telling you how I think. But we have just this, we've been together for 40 years. That's crazy. She was 14, I was 15. For the first 6 months, I had no idea who she was. Because I couldn't see anything above this. They were like, what colors her eyes? I remember my dad saying, you're big on this girl. I'm like, I'm big on her, Dad. He goes, what colors her eyes? I'm like, I don't know. I know she got blonde hair, only because I could see it down, you know, through the arms here. I'm like, she got blonde hair. You're like, 6 months you guys have been dating. You're on the bus with her every day. I'm like, yeah, I'm a little preoccupied. He's like, on what? And then he met her. He's like, oh, okay. I get it. And today, I could tell you that her hair is black with red highlights. She's got green hazel eyes. In her mind, she's a little overweight. In my mind, she's perfect. In her heart, she needs to do a lot of work on herself. In my heart, she was the greatest gift God ever gave me. When everybody counted me out, she counted me in. She put me on the street on April 30th, 1992, and then paid for me to go to treatment for 3 months and ate hot dogs and macaroni and cheese and told my parents she would never let me back in the house. She came for a session. She let me back in the house. I got out. I got clean. I became an NA speaker, and I abandoned her all over again, and she stayed. So when you call and you ask me to come speak and I tell you no, understand why. When you say, hey, can you do this? And I say, no, understand why. I owe. I'm indebted to my wife. She is the foundation of the legacy of my life. Because if she wasn't in my life, I don't know where I would be. And I know that sounds, really weird and creepy, but it's not. I was in the fifth grade, in the first grade in kindergarten. When I was five, I said I wanted to be a husband. And it's taken me 55 years or 50 years to reach that plateau of being a husband. So I owe my wife. I'm going to share this. I'm going to shut up. I was out on the front the other day, and my neighbor across the street, I'm going to share two things and I'm going to shut up. All speakers do that. I always, oh, I'm done. 25 minutes later, they're like, your time is up. Friday, we didn't come because Charlie Rose was graduating from kindergarten going into the first grade. And Charlie Rose is a little girl whose grandmother was clean and whose mom couldn't get clean. And her name is Stephanie. And she would come to my home group. And I don't sponsor women. I'm not debating nobody on that. I don't. Your choice is your choice. I don't sponsor women. And she would come to my home group and she would nod out on my shoulder. And people would say, why? And I would say, because Andre did it for me. But there's women in the fellowship. She's afraid of the women. And she trusts me. And then she got 30 days clean and met another newcomer, and they did what typical newcomers do, and she got pregnant and he shot dope. And I talked to that baby every day in her belly for 9 months. I was around this young lady every day. And then she had the baby and she had to go to work. And she needed a babysitter, and she called me and she said, you think Ashley would babysit Charlie Rose? I said, I think she would. And she watched Charlie Rose for 4 years. And Charlie Rose graduated on Friday from pre-K. She's going there from kindergarten. She's going to the first grade. And I haven't seen her in like 11 months because of the pandemic. And the car pulled up, and I went out in front of my daughter's house. My daughter and son-in-law's house. I went out in the front onto the porch, and I figured I would just get her bags. And she opened the door. And Charlie Rose saw me. She said, Hogan, Jimmy! She didn't look. She darted across the street, and she ran up, and she jumped in my arms, and she hugged me, and she said, I missed you with everything, and I love you, and I love you, Uncle Jimmy, and I love you, and I love you. And I said, I love you, baby. I missed you. She said, you don't know. I love you. I no more like this. So that's why we didn't come down Friday night. I wanted to be here for Barry and for Cindy and hang out and fellowship. But God shifted my priorities in life. And that little girl was more important that night. And she knows how I feel about her. And she'll be at my house in a couple weeks and then back in a couple weeks after that. And then yesterday was my daughter's graduation party. High honors. Should have been brain dead. I had to be there. And then when the cake was get cut, my wife and other daughter, my other daughter threw the party for her. We didn't throw it. My other daughter paid for everything, threw the party. It was time to cut the cake, and she was like, Dad! I'm like, what, baby? She said, cake, cut the cake. I'm like, Mommy and Ashley are there. She said, they ain't cutting the cake. And everybody's like, what do you mean, your sister and your mom? She's like, no, Dad. And I said to somebody, she's going to be 50, and I'm going to be like, you know, I don't know, 85, and she's going to come get me in my wheelchair to cut her cake with her. But the other day, I was out in front of my house with my neighbor, and he said to me, hey, I don't know if anybody's told you this, but what you've done with your children is phenomenal. This guy doesn't know me. He didn't hear me share somewhere. I never articulated profound things to him. He fell 2 years ago in the snow and broke his ankle. And we went and got him out of the snow and put him in the ambulance. I've helped him cut his grass. I helped my neighbor. Russell and I used to shovel my neighbor's property for 15 years. The medallion says when we care and share with others that in any way. This is great. I love doing this, but I like to help people who have no idea where I came from. And then they're like, you're so wonderful. I'm like, I smoked crack. He said, you've done a great job. I've watched your daughters grow up and prosper. And I watch you and Lori walk out of that house every Friday night with big smiles on your faces, get in the car and go to date night. We've been doing date night for 7 years, every Friday. People are like, you're ungrateful, you won't come speak at the convention. No, I'm grateful, I'm going out to dinner with my wife. Seven Steps says we return to the mainstream of life. Medallion says care and share with others the NA way. January 5th, Just for Today says recovery starts at home. I have to stop running off again and again and again. I said to my wife, I got to go to Maryland. She goes, thank God. The whole day? I'm like, well, no, we'll be back. Like, what time? Because, you know, I'm a little extra sometimes. I know who I am. But I have a good life. So if you're new, you're struggling, just hold on. Get in your sponsor's pocket. Listen, I talk to my sponsor every day with over 20 years clean. Every day. I check on them every day. I talk to them and I sponsor 2-3 times a week. Not each one of them. I sponsor a handful of guys. Why? Because you got to give back what was so freely given to you. And I want to be a light. And you don't take a lamp and put it underneath the table. You put it on the lampstand so it can illuminate the room. So if I'm a light, like the beacon of light that the basic text talks about, then I should be illuminating the room. The room should be a better place when we walk in, not because we're great people, but because we have a great fellowship who's transformed us and we have a relationship with a God who just shines through us because we've submitted ourselves to them. So I'm thankful. I'm thankful that in 40, 50 days I'll be walking her down the aisle. I'm not thankful she's leaving my home. They went for one of the final fittings yesterday. And her and my wife went, and I called and I said, can I get pictures? And she goes, Daddy, I didn't know if you'd want to come. I said, no, it's okay. And that's not how I felt. And she came back through the door. And she said, I'm sorry that I excluded you. Because I know this is getting hard. If you've married your kids off, especially if you're a dad and it's a daughter, this is very hard for me. I love this kid. I love him. I really do. I respect him. I honor him. But I don't want to let her go. I like her mess. No, I don't. I like my conversations with her every day. We'll get into the empty nest syndrome. And if you're older than me and you're already there, you understand that. I thought I was ready. I'm not ready. I told the little one, you sure you don't have 3 years of school? She's like, you want to pay? I'm like, yeah, one's good. One's good. But she's already planning with a friend of hers to move out when they graduate. It'll be an empty nest, 5-bedroom house, time to sell, downsize, something different. We're going to go to Florida 4 months a year. So I'm going to be a snowbird. I know Floridians don't like that, but I got enough friends down there that it's going to be like I'm not a snowbird because I'll probably be down there a lot more than I'm up here. And you don't tell my wife I said that, Russell, because she's like, I'm not going down there. Yet it's our happy place. So I'm grateful. If anything that I said was beneficial, helpful, we opened the meeting with a friendly prayer. That means your higher power, my higher power got together. They had a conversation. They said, you need to say this so that that person can get helped. I know I feel better coming up here and sharing. I wish I could have been here all weekend with you guys. I need to get back to conventions, and I need to get back to conventions as Jim. Right? Somebody said, say Jim. Identify yourself as Jim. I'm like, Jim? I wouldn't even know who that was. I just want to be Jimmy. I just want to be an addict, a member of Narcotics Anonymous who needs help still. That's what I want to be. I don't want to be the speaker anymore. I don't want to be on the circuit anymore. I don't want to be grandiose anymore. I just want to be just another guy who loves everybody that comes in the room. Because in the Living Clean book, page 254, it says love is the most powerful spiritual principle we have. And that Narcotics Anonymous is all about love. Where else can we be in the climate we're in right now, politically, medically, racially, and be in this room with every ethnicity, I'm sure every political belief, every spiritual belief, non-spiritual belief, every ethnicity, every background, and here we are in the spirit of love and unity because the common goal is to help the addict that still suffers and get basic text into the prisons. How about I did Rahway State Prison for 4 years, never spent a day in jail? You want to talk about scared? I was like, they're like, tell your story. I'm like, I smoke crack. I never went to jail. I'm like, they can't identify. They could identify. They could. 4 years we did H&I Railway State Prison. What a wonderful experience. So nobody told you guys they love you today. You might be hanging out with the wrong people. I love you guys. I thank you for the opportunity. I thank the committee for the invitation and extending it again, even though I wasn't able to attend for the whole weekend. Thank you, Brian, for driving from Philly. You know how I feel about you. Thank you, Russell. I love you. I love you guys. I am grateful for this opportunity. Thanks for letting me share.